Radio Prague News.
The cabinet broke off talks on the 2012 budget on Wednesday over fresh demands for more money for the Transport Ministry. An amendment to the law seeks to introduce medicinal marijuana, which would be available on prescription. And police in the northern town of Varnsdorf is gearing up for another anti-Romani protest over the weekend. The cabinet broke off talks on the 2012 budget on Wednesday over fresh demands for more money for the Transport Ministry. The junior coalition party Public Affairs has demanded an extra 9 billion crowns for the Transport Ministry, threatening to torpedo the settlement on church restitutions in the lower house if its demand was not met. The ultimatum raised the ire of Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek, who called it blackmail, pure and simple, and stressed that the proposed deficit of 105 billion crowns was not negotiable. An amendment to the law seeks to introduce medicinal marijuana, which would be available on prescription. The amendment, being prepared by a commission of experts, has received backing from the Prime Minister and is being strongly advocated by Public Affairs. Medicinal marijuana would be covered by health insurance under a similar model as that in effect in Canada or Israel. Police in the northern town of Varnsdorf is gearing up for another anti-Romani protest over the weekend. Over 300 people have confirmed participation on Facebook. In an effort to defuse growing ethnic tension, the local authorities have called a public debate on the problems behind the wave of anti-Romani sentiment. Hockey fans gathered in Zlín on Wednesday to pay their last respects to Czech hockey star Karel Rachunek, who died in last week's tragic plane crash in Russia. Over 1,000 people stood in pouring rain on the town's main square for an open-air memorial ceremony to the 2010 gold medalist. The funeral at 2 p.m. in the hockey star's hometown was private. The town of Ostrava has scrapped the municipal regulation on free city transport at times of heavy smog for lack of public funds. The regulation was part of a package of measures intended to encourage the city's inhabitants to leave their cars at home. Mayor Petr Kainar said the city could no longer afford to finance the operation. He said the measure would be brought back when the city could afford it. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The coming days should be clear to partly cloudy, with day temperatures between 16 and 20 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarova, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Sarah Barufka. Coming up in today's program, the Czech Republic's largest public tender faces an uncertain future. Czech football champions Viktoria Plzeň play their first ever Champions League group stage match. And later on in the program, we mark the 170th anniversary of Antonín Dvořák's birthday with a visit to the interactive Dvořák exhibition at the Czech Museum of Music, and find there is more to love about the composer than just his music.
He was not boring person, even a person from the 19th century, and that he was absolutely original in everything what he wrote and he did.
The future of the Czech Republic's largest public tender is uncertain after the finance ministry revealed that three firms had bid between 57 and 65 billion crowns to remove environmental damage inherited from the communist regime. Prime Minister Petr Nečas, as well as several other cabinet ministers, are increasingly receptive to arguments by the project's critics, who warned the tender might become the country's largest single corrupt deal. Jan Richter has more.
The finance ministry on Tuesday opened the envelopes with bids by three firms competing for what might be the biggest tender ever handed out in the Czech Republic. The Czech government in 2008 announced a tender for removing environmental damages and threats which originated during the communist regime in more than 500 sites around the country. The lowest bid of 56.8 billion crowns, or nearly $3.2 billion, came from the Czech branch of the Danish firm Marius Pedersen Engineering. The company Gelsan Group asked for 57.8 billion crowns, while Environmental Services, part of the Slovak financial group JNT, asked for 65.5 billion. The finance ministry, which is organizing the tender, will now review the bids before passing them on to the government, which is expected to reach a final decision on the project in October. Deputy Finance Minister Zdeněk Zajíček.
The government will also receive two audits which will lay out experts' opinions about how much the tender should cost. The government will therefore have relevant information about the costs to be able to decide.
But the bids disappointed Prime Minister Peter Nečas, who said in a statement on Tuesday he had increasing doubts about the whole project. The ECHO tender has also been criticized by the Junior Coalition Public Affairs Party. On the other hand, the deal has strong backing from Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek and his Topo 9 party. The project has also been sharply criticized by a number of NGOs. The Czech branch of Transparency International even said it might become the largest single corrupt deal in the country. Critics point out that no one really knows the real costs of removing the environmental hazards. When polluted factory premises, waste dumps, plots of lands and other property were privatized in the early 1990s, the state provided guarantees to their new owners of 115 billion crowns that these risks will be removed. But as Radim Bureš from Transparency International points out, the actual cost of removing them might be much lower.
We are dealing with entirely fictitious figures by not differentiating between the actual costs and the state guarantees for the removal of the environmental risks. These are estimated at around 115 billion crowns. On the other hand, the Environment Ministry estimated the actual cost at between 26 and 33 billion. So you see, it's not a couple of million crowns we're talking about, but rather tens of billions of crowns.
Critics say the cabinet would do best if it scrapped the whole deal entirely and parceled it up into individual cleanup projects. The government is expected to reach a final decision on the project next month, but commentators note that its struggle to reach a decision on the controversial cleanup tender might further destabilize the already shaky coalition.
Thank you for the story, Jan. Czech football champions Viktoria Plzeň played in their first ever Champions League group stage match on Tuesday, facing off against Belarus's Bate Borisov. With a goal from Marek Bakos late in the first half, the club showed plenty of spark, but the more experienced Belarusian team came back, leading to a 1-1 draw. Jan Wellinger has the story.
Czech club Viktoria Plzeň's maiden group stage match in the Champions League was by no means bad and notably could have finished even better if, for example, Jakub Hora had converted in his side's last chance in the final minute. Even so, Plzeň can largely be happy with Tuesday's result, the first appearance by a Czech club at the group stage since Slavia 5 years ago and Sparta before that. The match held at Prague's Eden Stadium featured enough quality moments, such as Bystroň heading an incoming corner, but only over the bar. Despite a slower start, Bate overall appeared closer to scoring as the match continued. In one moment, a shot by Gordiechuk was narrowly deflected. So it was a shock for the team then that the Czech side struck first in the final shot of the first half. Bilas sent the ball to Jiráček, who crossed to Bakos, who scored, continuing to show good form after scoring 6 goals in the qualifying stage. In the second half, Plzeň had opportunities to build on their lead, but gradually Bate patiently tightened the screws, spending more and more time in the Czech zone. Eventually, Bresan tied it, and although there were additional opportunities for both teams, 1-1 it remained. After the match, here's what Viktoria Plzeň's coach, Pavel Vrba, had to say.
Of course I'm disappointed because we led 1-0 and there were opportunities that we missed that could have won us the game. We had a set piece where Limberski missed in the penalty area and there was another close chance. To me it seems that Bate scored on their one good opportunity. The match, of course, wasn't the most precise, but I think our team and theirs approached this as an opening group stage match in which it's important not to lose. Both teams played more responsibly at the back. It was about getting the points. Of course, I'm happy we got one, but I would have preferred three.
A number of Plzeň players, including Milan Petržela, also rued miss opportunities in the second half, but overall were satisfied with their performance.
Tak my jsme vstoupili do druhé půle, chtěli jsme tam přijít s tím, aby jsme byli pořád stejně aktivní.
We wanted to be just as active in the second half, but then our opponent turned on the pressure and was able to score something of an easy goal. That gave them a boost and they began to play a more passing game, pushing us into more difficult situations and getting chances. On the whole, though, I think we have nothing to be ashamed of.
Petržela described as wonderful the first-time experience of playing in the group stage of football's most prestigious club competition, something that he said players had only previously known from TV. The team will play AC Milan, who on Tuesday tied 2-2 with defending champions Barcelona, next.
Thanks for that, Jan. And now, in today's spotlight, Christian Falvey takes us to the Czech Museum of Music, right here in Prague.
It's September, and all other anniversaries aside, that means the birthday season of the genius Antonín Dvořák. Had the Czech musical maestro lived to his deserved age, he would be 170 years old this month, and music lovers and ologists are marking the occasion with all due enthusiasm. Alongside the Dvořák festivals and radio tributes this month, there is also the uniquely interesting interactive Dvořák exhibition at the Czech Museum of Music, which is our destination in this week's Spotlight.
My name is Eva Velická. I'm the chief curator of Antonín Dvořák Museum and also the curator of this new Dvořák exhibition at the Czech Museum of Music. We organized this exhibition to mark the 170th anniversary of composer's birth. And why we decided to do it. Our museum owns the largest collection of Dvořák documents in the world. So really, we have a lot of things to show, but we wanted to show also other things, not only documents or scores, because it could be a little bit boring for people who do not know notes. So we try to connect showing of these documents with also presenting a life story of Dvořák, and we try to connect it with a modern design and graphic conception.
Well, there's a lot of things in the Czech Republic that we can see from Dvořák's life. We can go to his home in Nela Hozaves, and there's a Dvořák museum also in Prague dedicated specifically to Antonín Dvořák. So what can we see of particular interest here?
Yeah, because both of these buildings you mentioned belongs also to the National Museum, Czech Museum of Music. But I can tell you that you cannot find originals over there because it's not safe enough. And we have also not original documents from this period when Dvořák was there, for example, from the time when he was born in Nela Hozaves. And these precious documents cannot be shown everywhere. So here at the Czech Museum Music, it's safe enough to expose it, to show the documents. And these documents, they are here like an original autograph of the New World Symphony or autograph of Slavonic dances or some precious documents of Rusalka. They are normally closed in the depository rooms, and they are normally not shown to the public. So they were exceptionally brought here and shown to the public, some of them really for the first time.
So can we take a look?
Yeah, of course. Can even touch Dvořák, you can feel him.
Oh, really? There's a wall here, and there's a picture of Dvořák, and there's a hole in the wall with a kind of like velvet sock, and I can put my hand in it and just feel around what's inside. I feel I feel someone's face.
And here what was typical, Dvořák face. A huge white forehead, rather dark skin, bushy eyebrows.
Okay, I feel the bushy eyebrows in my hand right now. This is very interesting. Who thought of this?
Me.
This is your idea.
Yeah, because I prepared also some things for the theater, and these are really theater projects and preparing for things. Uh-huh. And here you can touch his hand, which was quite small, so I was surprised.
Oh, how do we know exactly how small his hand was?
It was made after his death. These hands. Oh. I'm sorry, so perhaps it's not so comfortable to touch his hand. Yeah, posthumous.
Yes, it is a small hand indeed.
Yeah, but he was quite tall, so you can have a look here.
Oh, we can even see.
178 centimeters. At this time, when Dvořák was alive, it was quite a lot. And here we have also DNA analysis.
A DNA analysis of Antonín Dvořák. So what did that show?
Well, yeah, very interesting thing that Dvořák or his chromosome comes from Middle East or from the region where we today have Caucasus or Pakistan.
So he had something of a Georgian or a Dagestani in him.
Yes, perhaps. So you can hear what, for example, his sister or father of Dvořák really. Quite untypical faces, quite dark skin, really deep eyes. So
very prominent eyes. I've always noticed.
Not very typical.
But do we know anything about the longer history of his family?
Yes, but it's a quite
They
were Czechs. It's a quite long story. But they were from places near from Nelahozeves. But Dvořák was born, and it was really Czech family. And if you compare it to Smetana. Smetana family, they spoke mostly in German, and Smetana learned Czech later, and we can find it also in his letter. He made a lot of mistakes, but the Dvořák case was different. They spoke just Czech, and he had to learn German in school a little bit later. So really he was a Czech composer from the beginning, and later on he had also a lot of invitations from Vienna, from Berlin, but again, he decided to be a Czech composer, and all the time he insisted on writing his name like Antonín, not Anton, because it was a German version and he didn't like it.
I'd like to ask you about this. You have in the wall here of the exhibition, you have a train window, an old-style train window. Dvořák loved trains.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if we go to Nelahozeves, we can see that he lived only just maybe 20, 25 or 50 meters away from the train tracks.
Yeah, that's right. We have a picture here. It's the church where Dvořák, he was baptized here in this church. It's really just on the train, and behind this church there is a birthhouse of Dvořák. And when he was 10, 12 years old, they built this railway over there, so he saw how they were building it, and it is said that there were also a lot of workers from Italy, and they sang arias from Nabucco and other operas from Verdi. So one Czech-American musicologist think that it was also the first time when Dvořák met Verdi and Italian music.
There's a legend that one of the humoresques was actually written according to the thumping of the steady rhythm of the train on the tracks. Is that true?
Yes, you can hear humoresque number 7 here also on display when we are talking about train. But unfortunately, we didn't find any documents which would prove this theory. So it is said that this rhythm is inspired by the train, but we have no proofs. And there is just one document which shows us that Dvořák was definitely inspired by trains, and it was the Seventh Symphony. We can find on the score of the Seventh Symphony that this idea came to him in the train while he was coming to Budapest. Place to relax, and here the water vibrates through the Dvořák music of Rusalka.
Oh, how interesting. So there's like a drum here where the top of it is just water, and inside, under the water, there's a speaker that's playing Rusalka. Yes.
But just the low frequency, so that we cannot hear it, but we can see it.
So we can actually watch Rusalka, the music. Amazing. Can I ask, what is your personal interest in Dvořák? I understand you're a musicologist.
Yes.
But why Dvořák in particular?
So really, I preferred contemporary music, and I liked all the time the music of 20th or now 21st century. But when I came to the museum 2 years ago and I became chief curator of the Dvořák Museum, I found a lot of points that actually also resemble contemporary music. It's really very exciting, and it's not boring thing. You can all the time find something very exciting and something very new. And I try to present Dvořák as a really great name, which still can bring an inspiration, because Dvořák is still alive.
And this is an exhibition of his personal life as well as his work life. What would you like people to take away from it? Maybe people who already love his music, but have much more to learn about him as a person.
That he was not boring person, even the person from the 19th century, and that he was absolutely original in everything what he wrote and he did. He was, we know it very well, that he was strongly religious Catholic, and perhaps he didn't like ceremonies or big audience, and really he liked more to be somewhere in the pub with his friends from the village. But on the other hand, he was very hardworking, and really he wanted to be successful. So it's all the time, it's quite important to see both these aspects of Dvořák.
Fascinating that you were able to take an exhibition about a person who died more than 100 years ago and make it so very interactive. You must have put in a tremendous amount of time into just sitting around thinking up new ideas.
Yeah, thank you. We did. It took us, I would say, 10 months to prepare the exhibition, and a very important part of the preparing was the cooperation with architect, with two set designers, and also graphics. So I think you can see it here at the exhibition, that it's a work of several people from different eras.
But in only 5 years, there will be the 175th anniversary of the birth of Dvořák, and will you be able to outdo yourself?
I think we are going to celebrate kind of Czech music year or something like that, because it's going to be an anniversary of more composers, not only Dvořák. So perhaps we will try to present all of these big names all together. But I don't know how we will do it, but we have some plans.
You have time.
Yeah, time also.
Eva Velitska, curator of the Antonín Dvořák Museum, ending a report by Christian Falvey there. Thanks for that, Christian. And now we are rounding off our regular weekday program here on Radio Prague with Soundcheck, our popular Czech language learning program, brought to you this time by Rosie Johnston.
Knoflíku z bakelitu, drž pevně na kabátu.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Soundcheck, which will appeal in particular to dedicated followers of fashion. This song is by dissident folk singer Jaroslav Hutka and is called Knoflík, meaning button. The phrase to listen out for in this ode to a fastening device comes near the end of the song and goes Ti mě máš na triku.
Knoflíku, knoflíku, ty mě máš na triku, jak si se utrhnul, na zem si upadnul.
This week's chosen song lyric is actually a bit of a pun, because literally knoflíku, knoflíku, ty mě máš na triku means o button, you have me on your t-shirt. But idiomatically, mít někoho na triku, to have somebody on your t-shirt, means to be responsible for somebody or to take responsibility for someone. So, what Hutka is actually singing here is o button, you're responsible for me, or you've taken responsibility for me. How? Because, in short, the singer's button has fallen off his t-shirt, his superficial old girlfriend was so disgusted by his appearance that she left him, and he sings Dnes už mám lepší holku, now I've got a better girlfriend. All this because of his missing knoflík, which is certainly no longer na triku.
Knoflíku, knoflíku, ty mě máš na triku, jak jsi se utrhnul, na zem si upadnul, dnes už mám lepší holku.
So, mít někoho na triku can mean to take responsibility for someone, and in this vein you can also say to si nevezmu na triko, I will not take that onto my t-shirt, meaning figuratively, I refuse to accept responsibility for that, or I will not have that become my responsibility. But mít na triku, to have on one's t-shirt, also has another, slightly different idiomatic meaning. On má tři vraždy na triku means he's guilty of three murders, or, more colourfully, he's got three murders to his name. So, if you have a crime or a series of unfortunate statements or some other failure on your t-shirt, then it means that you're guilty of a crime or of making a series of unfortunate statements, that they're on your account.
Knoflíku, knoflíku, ty mě máš na triku.
And finally, here are a couple of further sartorial idioms for Radio Prague's more fashion-conscious listeners. If a product or a building is unveiled v novém kabátě, in a new coat, that means it's been given a facelift. So, the headline Pražský Music Hall otevírá v novém kabátě translates as Prague Music Hall opens after facelift. And the idiom převlekat kabát, to change your coat, actually means to change your stripes. So you will often read that a politician převlekl kabát, but instead of meaning the literal, that he or she donned a new coat, it means rather that he or she swapped one allegiance for another. But that's enough layering of clothing idioms, one on top of the other. So, nasledanou, goodbye.
Knoflíku, knoflíku, ty mě máš na triku. Jak jsi se utrhnul, na zem si upadnul, dnes už mám lepší holku. A chodím bez kabátu.
Rosie Johnston with Soundcheck wrapped up Radio Prague's English show for today. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from myself, Sarah Barufka, and from all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.